What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Welcome to Just a Bit Outside, the baseball movie podcast brought to you by Bucko Banter. Today we break down Moneyball, the story of a budding friendship between a jock and a stats nerd who join forces to almost lead the A's to do something.
Rockin' 101, she compliment my taste. Whiskey in my lemonade, cause I like the way it tastes. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates. Order steak by the plate, send in case after case. Run my race at my pace, clear the grass of the snake.
All right, folks, today we have the usual duo of myself and Mr. Miller, but we are joined by an esteemed guest, Mr. Alex J. Stumpf. Alex, if you want to give yourself a little intro, and then I heard tale of your philosophy on baseball movies.
Yeah, I want to start off by saying thank you for having me. This is one of my favorite movies in general, kind of 1A, 1B of my two favorite baseball movies. This is one. But I kind of want to spoil your whole podcast you got going here and just give you the theory of what makes a good baseball movie.
Get in line, pal, if you're trying to ruin this podcast. We already got it. We are way, way in front of you here, big guy.
It comes down to, it can only half be about baseball. It's America's pastime, so it also has to be something that also is kind of tied into America. Or like an ideal or something like that. Like Field of Dreams and A League of Their Own. It's like, okay, that's going to be the familial tie that the game has, whether it's, you know, father or son or siblings or something like that. Bull Durham, that is just Americana through and through. Well, something like Mr. 3000, it's like, don't be greedy. Well, that's not really an American ideal, so that's not a very good movie.
It's kind movie. Of anti, yeah.
Yes, and this one and my other favorite baseball movie, Major League, I think comes down to hope that you have this great opportunity, you have your foot in the door, and you can do something incredible as a team. It may not be what you thought it was going to be or what you sought out to do, but you can do something incredible. So I think that this is what this is a movie more than anything, more than a baseball movie. It's a movie about hope.
One note on hope is it's usually, if you're a Pittsburgh sports fan, the most dangerous of the emotions to have because it just never works. So that's my thought on hope. But I do agree.
Wow. I had a nice little.
It is too early for this. Oh, my God.
Wow. I mean, let's be real.
We finally get human emotion from Al. And then you're like, well, nothing ever good's going to happen to me.
I actually do agree with you. I was thinking about like movie genres as a whole the other day, and we were talking about how, you know, I hadn't seen this movie before this, and I said I don't really watch sports movies that often, and then I was thinking that's not really a genre of movie, right? Like, sports are always just the setting, they're the vehicle for what the actual story is, right? Like, this one is like more like a fictionalized retelling or like a historical fiction type of movie, right? Like, this really did happen, but not in the exact way that they're going to portray it, but as a vehicle for like a drama or a comedy. I agree with you. I think there does have to be some other sort of kind of message throughout the entire thing. It's not just about the sport. I like that philosophy. So let's get into what we are breaking down today. Moneyball, September 23rd, 2011 release date, directed by Bennett Miller. A stacked cast here, honestly. We have Brad Pitt as old Billy Bean, Jonah Hill in the movie as Peter Brand, Philip Seymour Hoffman, RIP. We got a lot of RIPs so far in the pod, unfortunately. Such is life. As Art Howe, Chris Pratt as Scott Hatterberg, and Karis Dorsey, his daughter, Casey Bean. So let's just dig into it here. The movie starts on a bit of a high note. Things are going well for the A's as the movie just starts. And we will soon see that all good things must come to an end. So it starts off in the 2001 ALDS. The A's are doing well. They have their three kind of flagship players, as they paint it in the beginning of the movie. They have Isringhausen, they have Jason Giambi, and the third I'm already blanking on off the top of my head.
Giambi.
Didn't they mention it was Damon?
Johnny Damon. Yeah. Correct.
Come on, boys. What are we doing?
I thought he started with Damon. My bad.
And they then go on to say immediately how these three players are jumping ship to go on to potentially greener pastures, certainly with higher payrolls, which kind of introduces the main conflict of the movie. How are they going to recover from losing three of their marquee players who brought them to game five of the ALDS with their payroll at the time of $39,722,689? So how are they going to revitalize this team and replace these three players in the aggregate? So Chris, you want to give us a little breakdown of how we kind of go through pre-intro to Peter Brand?
So before we meet Mr. Brand, we get to see, and I think this is something that every Pittsburgh fan can relate to, a guy sitting by himself listening to good baseball and just his life just kind of being better, even though this is something that happened in the past. We get to see Billy Bean kind of, you know, this is freewheeling dealing Billy Bean, and he ends up going to Cleveland. To Cleveland to try to figure out exactly what he's going to do here. Essentially, you get the point that Billy's trying to save his job more than he's trying to put a winning team together, because he knows that he's kind of, his back is against the wall, and even people in Cleveland are very much in the know about this one, and they're getting a little bit chippy. You know, it's everybody's they know that they already have the upper hand here, and then he's not going to be able to afford the players that he wants. And then enter everybody's favorite chubby baseball nerd, Jonah Hill.
So you know what, I love about this introduction here real fast. I'm just going to poke in with nerdy stuff. Billy going into that room, everyone has a seat. Everyone has a spot, you know, where they've, you know, except for Peter Brand. He's standing up. Everyone else has got a chair in that scene. Like, it just is a perfect way to say, yeah, I'm in the room, but I don't really belong here. I just love that little attention to detail there, just to show, like, yeah, he is esteemed this much. He is the guy who is saying, no, you don't want to trade Garcia. this is not the type of move you should do. But the actual baseball world doesn't really think of him enough to be like, you want to not stand for this undetermined length of time?
And yeah, it definitely introduces Brand as an actual outsider, which, you know, it's unclear what his job is. You know, whenever Bean sees him in the room, because he knows everybody else except this guy. Like I said, he's literally an outsider, as he is on the outside of the conversation. And whenever, like you said, whenever he whispers in his ear, you know, Billy proposes a trade, and
there's a bit of a telephone game going on. It goes from person to person to person. And I mean, I think Billy Bean's attitude towards him at that point kind of reflects that. He's like, who is this guy? Why is he telling you what to do? He's kind of unsure what Peter Brand's role is. And this is kind of in a juxtaposition to the scene previous where, I guess the two scenes previous where, one, they just kind of try to throw money at the problem, where Billy Bean goes to the owner and says, we need more money. And he just says flat out, that's not happening. And then it cuts to the scene where they're in the room with all the scouts doing their, you know, manalytics, their eye test. They're just, oh, the ball flies off this guy's bat. And like, that's also clearly not working. Then we introduce Peter Brand. After that meeting in Cleveland, Billy Bean goes up to Peter, talks to him and says, who are you? What do you do? Where are you from? You're from Yale. You studied economics. Why? Who's your uncle? Right? Like, how are you here? Why are you here? What is your role in baseball, you know, in Cleveland? And what is the role of the type of person that you are in baseball at large, right? Like, we're introducing this new kind of concept into baseball of not just the, oh, this guy really mashes, but the sabermetrics, the analytics. And then you kind of introduce this dynamic between Peter Brand and Billy Bean as to what will be kind of like the primary duo for the rest of the movie. Peter says there's an epidemic failure in the game to understand what is happening, goes through some analytics. You want to talk about that a little bit, Alex, kind of your understanding of like the bit of the disconnect between the, you know, that boy nice baseball watcher versus the just the statistics guys?
Yeah, I mean, it was something foreign at the time, and I'm going to skip a little bit here. No, I'm going to skip it a little bit in a second here. It is interesting to see. This is the first wave of analytics, really, you know, that's been implemented in front offices. And this movie came out in 2011, which is kind of the tail end of that first wave still. Like, we haven't really gotten into how do you incorporate stuff into player development. How do you do it? It's still very much acquisition and strategy. Like, we're just about on the precipice in 2011 of like, maybe we should shift all the time. So it's stuff like that. So it was foreign, and I think they do a good job in this movie just showing the room of, you know, who Billy is saying. And it's a bunch of old guys with hearing aids and, you know, windbreakers and polo shirts. Peter Brand walks in, he's in a full suit and tie. He does not belong in this room whatsoever. No. But I think one of the smartest things this movie does, just through props real fast, whenever Billy, to bridge that, you know, that boy nice, you know, history to analytics, is the scene whenever they're going through, Billy, this is Chad Bradford, you know, stuff like that. And Jonah Hill's walking in, and he's got to work with his computers, but he's flipping a baseball to himself just to show that, like, I can't play, but, you know, this is a part of my life. And then you got Billy Bean looking at these spreadsheets of numbers that he's never seen before, and he's got a wad of chew in his mouth, and he's, you know, spitting into a cup right there. It's like, that's the old school baseball versus the new school baseball coming together and just showing both sides. That it they don't have to butt heads. They can be two different types of personalities to kind of lead a ball club.
It was nice of Billy Bean to kind of take the leadership role here as kind of like the mediator of jock v nerd. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like the Hague, but for cool guys and Alex.
And we have a scene that's amazing. We have a scene here that kind of shows why he's so willing to play that role. And it's because he feels a bit traumatized by his own baseball career. All the guys that were saying, this has to be, Billy Beane has to be the guy. He passes the eye test. He's the man. He's the big dog. And then his pro career just does not pan out in the way that anybody foresaw it, especially not Billy Beane himself. So we kind of flip back and forth a few times throughout the movie between the current day recruiting and team building of the Oakland Athletics, and then Billy Beane reflecting on how they use the old school approach, how he was recruited and how that didn't work out for him, and how he wants to stray away from that to build this new athletics team. After that reflection, that's when we go back to the Oakland A's facility. We have that brilliant scene where Peter meets the scouts for the first time. I mean, that scene is just amazing. Shortly before that, we introduce another little bit of conflict as well between Art Howe, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, who's the manager of the team, and Billy Beane as well, where there's a conflict about, is he going to get another contract? Is he not going to get another contract? You know, this is his last year. This team is really make or break for a lot of people within the organization. Art Howe and Billy Beane at the top of that list. So they go through that scene that we had just discussed where Peter Brain is in the room. No one trusts him. No one believes him. Also, there's like 15 people in the room and then like 15 jocks v one nerd. And Billy Beane's just pointing at him, putting him on the spot in front of everybody. And he's saying, you know, well, he gets on base, right? And his contributions there are just so minimal. I love that. Like, his ideas are huge, but the actual words that he's saying are just so minimal. And I love that back and forth.
He plays it as strictly business and a scene that reads very funny if you watch it again. But I mean, like, so does everybody. Like, the whole scene is very quick. The dialogue is very, very punchy. They're looking at, you know, if you want to go to the quarter zip crowd, the jocks, they're one of the things that they're looking at. One of the cons to one of the players is that he has an ugly girlfriend. He lacks confidence. He's got no confidence. He's got an ugly girlfriend. Little question here. Is that cool?
It's not cool.
Doesn't sound cool to me.
Not cool.
Sound cool to me. But that's how you know.
Bad guys.
That's not good behavior.
That's the old school analytics.
But then it's, and then, you know, it cuts to Peter Brand. Like, what does he do? He gets on base.
The cinematography in this part of the movie is just fantastic. It's coming in and out of focus between Billy Beane and Peter Brand and the scouts. And it's kind of just like not quite a whirlwind. It's not that fast paced, but it's very much showing that there's a disconnect between how the two separate sides are looking to play this game, how they're looking to recruit the players and the types of players that they're looking to recruit.
And it's interesting that you say that, because one of the he's credited as a writer. He did just a little touching up on the script, but he actually liked the original script so much that he gives himself second billing in this, is Aaron Sorkin. And if you need somebody to direct and, you know, polish a scene where it's a bunch of people talking quickly in a room with like handheld camera work to make it look really cool, it's Aaron Sorkin. Like, that's your dude.
Yeah, this scene was just absolutely incredible. And I mean, it is one of the more, you know, famous scenes in the movie, but it's, I mean, for a reason. I think it's phenomenal. So they talk about Hatterberg playing first base. Then we cut to a scene where, you know, we'll kind of stray from the path here on occasion, where Billy Beane goes and you kind of explore a bit of his familial life. He goes to his ex-wife's house, meets his ex-wife's new husband, I guess, or partner, whoever it might be, who very clearly maybe kind of sort of knows a little bit about the A's, but nothing really. He calls Giambi Giambino and says, it's a real shame that you lost, you know, Giambini. And then you set
he's
up.
He's just trying to find a common ground here. It's trying to be funny. Also, you know who the new husband is?
Spike Jones.
Spike Jones.
Oh.
One of my favorite directors.
I didn't catch that off the bat there.
Yeah, watch it again, because it's a very quick scene.
Yeah.
But like the first time I saw him, I've seen this movie 100 times, and I never realized until like the fourth or fifth time that I watched it, I was like, oh my God, it's Spike Jones.
That's amazing. I did not catch that. The kind of crux of that scene is he then picks up his daughter. They take her to a guitar center or something of that nature. And they have a nice moment where she's playing the guitar and she is singing. And that kind of introduces the fact that this is the most important thing to Billy Bean, most likely. We're not quite sure yet, I think, if it's his family, his daughter, and or how much this baseball stuff actually means to him. But this is when we start to lead down that road a little bit to kind of understand, oh, this probably is going to be the most important thing to Billy Bean, you know, moving on here. Then we go back to the office. We're back at the A's facility doing some more discussion about the old school versus the new school. We get introduced to a new moniker for Peter Brand at this point by one of the scouts in a bit of a tense situation where he refers to Peter as Google Boy, which I loved. Laughed out loud at that. Google Boy is great. A lot of this early part of the movie is just this tension between it and the team building, because we don't actually get to see the outcome of that until the players are on the field. There's a bit of a montage on negative discussions and player criticisms here of the players that they're going to add to the roster. And it focuses on three main players throughout the movie. Those are Scott Hatterberg, who they want to play first base, David Justice, who's kind of an aging end of his career player that the Yankees ate a bunch of salary on to get him off their team. And then Chad Bradford, who is a reliever who throws a bit submarine style and everyone has given up on because he throws a little bit funny. So we have a montage of all of the Alex Stumps of the world, the sports media, criticizing these three players, saying they're washed, they're bad, they're, you know, they can't do it again.
The radio call-in, because there's a lot of Billy Bean listens to a lot of the radio. Like he absorbs a lot of media except baseball, which one of the runners is Billy Bean does not watch the games. But he listens to a lot of talk radio in this, and the callers are all phenomenal. I love every single one of them, because like, if you've listened to any team after a loss that has a radio call-in show, it is all of these. Like, people threatening violence, screaming. Like, it's tremendous. It is absolutely fantastic. Everybody needs to get fired.
And things do not get better, because it's around this time that we start spring training and opening day. And that is also when we find out that, one, Billy Bean does not watch the games, and two, that there is friction between Billy Bean and Art Howe over who is going to play first base. Art Howe says, I'm trying to manage this team as to where I can get a job next year, because he thinks the ship is sinking. Billy Bean says, you're not listening to the strategy here. Scott Hatterberg has to play first base. Instead, they're playing Carlos Pena at first base, who has a bit of a larger role as the movie goes on here. There's a standoff with Art about this particular subject, and you know, no one has yet to adopt the Moneyball tactic that Billy and Peter have come up with just yet.
How there would be a lot of friction there. This is a brand new concept. You know, sabermetrics had not made their way into the league yet. Now, if you look, it's in broadcasts. But one of the important parts of this movie is you have to view it as a period piece. And Art Howe is the old guard, who I think might be portrayed a little unfairly. I can't imagine that there was this much tension between manager and GM. I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't watch a lot of 2011 A's baseball. But we do get to see them at spring training. And the one jarring part is right after this, it's you doing your job and me doing mine scene. They show the American flag in center field and it's like really small. Did you guys notice that? It's like a regular size flag. It's only like slightly above average. It's not like one of these giant flags that everybody has out. I don't know why that cracks me up. It's just like a normal flag with some dudes instead of like now at every football game they have the 100 yard flag. It's just like a little bigger than normal.
They paid $237,000 per square foot of that flag while the Yankees played $1.4 million per square foot.
We didn't get to that joke yet, Al. We didn't get to that joke.
Oh, it's coming a couple times for me.
But they just can pay warned. Joe Satriani, man. They had Joe Satriani playing the national anthem. Which always sounds cool coming out of a guitar.
Like, super cool.
The Hendrix effect.
The team was not cool enough at the time for that to be the case.
Bay Area is cool. Like, were you ever at the Coliseum?
No.
Did you ever make it?
I was not.
I caught it the last year.
It was terrible, but it was just awesome. It's, they famously called it the last dive bar, like for a reason. Like it was cool. Everybody in the bleachers on like left center, they were all wasted. Guys had drums. It was fantastic.
Are you telling me that the Coliseum was the take a break of the MLB?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I would want to pin that on them.
They're not that prestiged.
No,
they're not that prestigious. We have another montage here. There's a lot of montages. There's a lot of collar montages, criticism montages, players doing well montages, players doing poorly montages. A lot of montages in this. Could be a bit hacky, I think, but I actually really like it in the movie because they do it, I think, in a tasteful way and in a way that gets the message across without seemingly kind of harping on it. The team's not doing well to start. It's kind of painted as they're not listening to Billy and Peter. And there's a kind of money ball montage of them just getting ripped from everyone around the league saying, hey, this is not working, which I think is probably fairly indicative, like you said, Chris and Alex, of how they were seen at the time. Like, this is just not how the game is supposed to be played. It's not about that.
And we also get this while Billy Beane is sitting in his super cool Walker Texas Ranger truck.
Oh, super cool. I mean, he's certified, fortified badass in that truck.
Yeah. Like that is the OG Dodge Ram with brush guard and roll bar.
Hey, listen, he almost rolls that puppy a little bit later on in the movie, too.
that's a strange scene.
He also apparently has like 2010s Bluetooth for his cell phone.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah,
it's like, well, that's a pretty clear call you're having in 2002 in general, let alone handheld mode. All right.
So we have our start to the season. They start 20-26, which is in and of itself maybe not that bad for what the team was expected to do. However, at this point in time, they have lost 14 of their last 17, which is definitely not good to lose 14 of 17. There's a little bit of Billy Beane criticism montage now himself, correlating their failures to his failures. He's trying to swing for the fences because, you know, he's making up for his own failures. There's a scene here that shows that Billy is, you know, quite can be quite hot-headed, where there's a forget exactly what the catalyst is for this, but there's a pretty bad player. They lose the game and you just see it's a shot down a hallway and you just see a chair get thrown out of the room into the hallway, which I actually thought was great because you're like, why are they just showing an empty hallway here? This is, and then a chair just right across the frame.
There's a lot of throwing things in this movie. And I don't know that anything expresses frustration better in celluloid. And I mean, you see it in baseball constantly, not just like the pitching and the mechanic side of just being so mad that you just launch something. Yeah. It's like the Sean Rodriguez Gatorade cooler. Sometimes you just got to destroy something.
And he's destroying a lot of things. The two big things in this movie that I think Billy Beane is always doing is getting mad and destroying things and constantly eating things or chewing on things all the time throughout the whole movie, constantly.
It's the second baseball movie in a row that has a lot of snacking.
I mean, his mouth is full. There's a hilarious scene later where he's like bouncing back and forth between phone calls, and he's just shoveling handfuls of popcorn in his mouth between these phone calls.
I love that he has a big bowl of popcorn. Good for him.
He's just, I mean, he got his popcorn ready. He listened. Maybe fan of the show, I'll say it. Billy Bean, fan of the show.
I knew it. He's a jobber.
That's why we did this. He's a jobber.
He ate a Twinkie in two bites where he didn't chew after the first bite, and it is one of the more mesmerizing. Then, why would you do that?
So it makes it, he's built different, man.
And I'll say this. I don't know what this movie is rated, but it's definitely not PG after that scene. I'll tell you that much.
I believe this is our first R-rated film.
And that's why.
I don't know. I don't think Mr. 3000. There's no way, because he kind of pitched it as a family comedy. Bernie could have made it R, but I'm almost positive it's PG. PG-13.
I think that's right.
2000's comedy has to be PG-13.
Yeah.
So after all this criticism, we revisit the father-daughter dynamic between Billy and his daughter, with another touching scene that also has one of the best quotes and the most hilarious quotes in the movie. I think, you know, they're getting some ice cream. His daughter is concerned for his job because the A's are just getting brutalized, 14 of 17. And she asks him, you know, do you think you're going to lose your job? And if you do, are you going to have to move away? And, you know, he doesn't want her hearing this, thinking about this. He said, well, where did you get that idea? She says, well, I read something online. And he says, don't do that. Don't go on the internet or watch TV or read newspapers or talk to people. Just don't do anything at all, even remotely related to the Oakland Athletics at all. Don't listen to this whatsoever. Great quote. But it, I mean, I think that does show that he is quite actually concerned with how he's being perceived and what that might mean for his job and what that might mean for his family. And he should be.
Yeah, Billy Bean is definitely like the way that they're making him not only more relatable, but in the way that it's, you know, he's just a good guy, is his relationship with his daughter. You know, it's even his relationship with his ex-wife. You know, everything is cordial. He's a devoted dad, all this. And you can see how it's, you know, Billy is being pulled in a lot of directions in this movie. He's unfamiliar with the concept of Moneyball, but he knows he has to do it. So he's conflicted that way because he was a baseball player. And that's, you know, it was not a concept that they used at the time. And, you know, him as a professional, as a working father, as a divorced father, but he's like his relationship with his daughter. He's pulled in a lot of directions, and you can kind of see the tensions are building within Billy Bean throughout all of this. Whenever he's driving around his sweet Walker Texas Ranger truck and constantly in the Coliseum gym. And it's only the Coliseum gym because he does not travel with the team. He does send Peter Brand to travel with the team, though, is kind of his eyes and ears.
On the family thing, two things I noticed. One, Billy Bean's wearing his wedding ring the entire movie, even though he's presumably divorced.
I did not catch that. That's really good.
And I also,
in 2011, I did Google it. He was actually remarried again.
Okay.
So well, maybe was he remarried? He was remarried in 2011. They don't talk about his wife. Okay. And that one, and I think
they really imply he's living on his own.
Right. Yeah. I think. Yeah. This is more of a like, you know, he still loves like the family that he had.
Yeah. And whenever we're introduced to her, it's her mom and her stepdad bought her a cell phone. She's like, oh, no discussion about this. And his immediate reaction is, all right, we're going to the music store. We're going to get you the guitar that you want. That's the present. And then she comes over the plane. She has one carry-on bag. She doesn't even have anything for like clothes, presumably, but she brought the guitar as the one carry on. And I don't know, it sets up the ending very nicely, I feel.
I agree with that. These scenes I love because I could understand maybe if you think that they're a little bit like corny or forced, but I didn't feel that way at all. And I do think it sets up the end quite nicely. And I think they do a really good job of humanizing Billy Bean throughout the movie. Like, he's not just the guy who chose to follow the stats. It's like he was risking a lot here, right? It's like if this doesn't work out, then he has to potentially lose this family dynamic that he cares about and enjoys. I thought that was great. Alex, in, you know, at this point in the movie, only really bad things have been happening for Billy Bean. Do you think that they characterize how he's handling it fairly well? Like, from what you've seen in baseball about how managers are, you know, they have to have this kind of cool, calm, and collected demeanor most times, but they're definitely sweating it, you know, under the collar.
I mean, yeah, I mean, whenever the media gets figures out that someone's really sweating, it's like, oh, it's bad. Because, like, even if things are really, really bad, just an example, like the last couple days, you know, covering Derek Shelton, he really tried to make it seem just like, you know, business as usual, because it's like you can't concede that the walls are closing in right there. So I think they do a good job just kind of showing that aspect of, okay, no one else, you're not supposed to see this. Yeah. You're not supposed to see. He won't even show it to the players. Like, he'll come in being a hard ass saying is losing fun. Yeah. He'll have that type of moment.
And the next scene here, I think that kind of attitude and him, that's kind of boiled over for him in the next scene. Like, this next scene, he is about to be about that action, right? So you talked about the plane scene where his daughter leaves, and now he's like, I need to do what I need to do to make this thing work. Before that happens, really quickly, though, right before his daughter's about to get on the plane, he tells her that planes crash all the time. And then he's like, see you later.
That is so funny to me. I like when he says, don't, yeah, what are you doing? Worry about me. Don't worry about me. He's like, you're just about to get on an airplane. These things crash all the time. That's incredible. I love it's that. Just...
This movie is set in 2002.
It sure is. It's the, you know, it's a piece of history.
Yeah. It is.
So the next scene, the next scene we have Billy about to be about that action. And we actually have Pete trying to kind of talk him off a cliff a little bit. Like, he is about to go scorched earth.
And we also have what Alex said is, like, you know, the media can kind of get the sense. It's like the blood in the water. And outside the clubhouse, they're waiting for him to talk to him. And everybody's like, hey, Billy. And he pushes past them, walks right through into the clubhouse.
And he knows that he's about to go make some serious decisions. Peter tries to talk him off a cliff, and then Billy hits him with the old reverse psychology. And he was like, I'm about to do, as I drop my notebook, I'm about to do the thing that you've been wanting to do. Like, do you believe in this thing or not? Because if you do, we're about to ship some guys off here and really see if this thing is about to work. And that's what he ends up doing. We start to see, I think, at this point, like the wheeling and dealing nature of Billy Bean, which is one of my favorite parts of the movie. So he starts making some serious trades. He ends up trading Jeremy Giambi and Carlos Pena to really test this money ball theory, right? Giambi was a bit of a wild guy, clubhouse problem. There's a scene where he gets confronted earlier on, like you said, you know, do you like losing? They have this standoff in the clubhouse. And it's framed as Art Howe simply will not play Hatterberg at first base if Pena is there. So Billy Bean just says, there's not going to be any more decisions to make. I'm going to force your hand. Trades Pena, trades Giambi. And now the money ball simply has to work because there's no other options for players. At least that's how it's framed. And we get a little bit of an interesting scene with Peter Brand here where earlier in the movie, they set this up talking about how do you cut players? How do you tell players that they've been traded? And surely Peter Brand will never have to do that. But Billy makes Peter tell Carlos Peña that he's been traded. And he does it in the exact way that Billy tells him to. And it goes quite well, actually.
Yeah, whenever they practice letting somebody know that they're getting cut or traded or demoted or whatever, Billy plays it a little faster and looser than a lot of these guys. That scene is very, very good. Like, what do you mean? I just bought a house here. I bought a house in Oakland. You can't cut me. Like, Peña kind of just looks and goes, all right. And then goes, clears out his locker, and it's strictly business.
And after all these moves happen, I think maybe it's maybe like the most recognizable quote from the movie. You see Billy Beane go into the clubhouse and say, you may not look like a winning team, but you are one. And he starts it off so strong. And then he doesn't really have a follow-up after that. He just doesn't really have a way to bring it on home.
And the last time we saw Billy in the clubhouse, he was smashing jukeboxes and, you know, throwing chairs. And I think a Gatorade cooler again gets tossed. But the thing I like most about the trading guys away scene with Peña and Giambi, it shows the human side of baseball, where it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's not a uniform. There's a person in there, you know, his family, has a house, his friends, you know, it's there is a reality that sets in. And it's another thing that I think Billy might have been a little hesitant about is, you know, these are human beings. These are real people. He was one of them, and like it, and it sucks.
And that's kind of constantly lingering under the surface of, like, there's always this thought in the back of Billy Beane's head as to, like, one, he's trying to prove that he can have a successful career in baseball because he frames his playing career as unsuccessful, or at least not as successful as he wanted to be. And I think maybe even more so than he wants to have a successful career, he doesn't want to feel less than on two separate baseball careers, his playing career and his GM career as well. We're following this up with another montage here. This one's a bit of a feel-good montage, though, where he's kind of going around player to player, trying to motivate them, explaining why the stats are backing up his choices, the team starting to do well, getting real with Justice, saying, you know, I'm not paying you for the player that you were. I'm paying you for the player that you are right now, right? Embrace your leadership role. A feel-good montage now, which I thought was quite nice, which sets up the winning that the A's are now doing. I did think it's a little, you know, I mean, this part, I think, and I would have to go back and look at the records. Maybe, Alex, you have a better idea of this, but it's like, they chip off Giambi and Peña, and then it's like a switch is flipped, and they're just like the Megatron of baseball teams now. Like, they can never lose again. I mean, I'm sure that that's not the case in real life. The movie certainly sets it up that way. Kind of, do you have an idea of any of like the growing pains there?
Off the dome, no. I mean, I remember they started slow and then picked up. I don't know, it was, you know, right whenever the trade was made, but they did. They had a good head of steam going into the winning streak, you know, even before then.
Yeah, it did. It wasn't immediate, but it was in fairly short order. Back whenever before we press on here, one of my favorite parts about the Justice conversation, whenever Billy's, you know, having his heart to hearts with these ball players, and, you know, David just said, I was a Yankee. He said, right, you were a Yankee. And now they're paying you. He's like, you're paying me $7 million a year. Right. And they're paying you $3.5 million a year to play against you. Like, that's who the Yankees think you are, not who I think you are. It's who the Yankees think you are. And it's that humbling moment, you know, kind of make to David Justice, like, listen, you're the vet. I need you on my side here. Like, I need you to lead this team. And I always really enjoyed that moment. But then in the winning montage, it might be the only slow motion baseball montage I've ever seen. It's like just walks. It's just dudes taking pitches. It's slow motion of them just with a good eye.
Just getting on base.
Right. Why? He gets on base.
There is another pretty funny part here where Justice is trying to take a like a big brother leadership role with Hatterberg, and he's just eating cereal. And he's like, "What's your biggest fear?" And Hatterberg's like, "A baseball being hit in my general direction." And Justice laughs a little bit, and then he's like, "No, actually." And Hatterberg's like, "Actually, a baseball being hit in my general direction."
Which, well, good luck with that.
Good luck with that. It's so
funny. Which is wild to me that a pro baseball player, you know.
Well, Hatterberg was not a first baseman.
He's a pro baseball player.
He's a professional baseball player. It's first base. How hard can it be? Tell him, Al.
It's incredibly hard.
Incredibly hard.
The Ron Washington, it's incredibly hard line. 10 out of 10. I shoehorn that into as many conversations as I possibly can.
And since we touched on Art Howe kind of having like a hatchet job to his personality in this, Ron Washington gets his flowers in this movie, and he deserves them. Oh,
absolutely. And nobody deserves it like Wash. Nobody.
An all-time baseball guy.
Yes.
An all-time baseball guy.
Maybe the best baseball man of our lifetimes.
It's wild.
Yeah, probably. He's also seen a ton of really, really cool stuff.
Next we have, I think, one of my favorite scenes, if not my favorite scene in the whole movie, is just Billy wheeling and in addition to and as well as dealing. He's doing both of those things. And he goes back, and this is a little cheeky kind of gotcha moment with Cleveland, where he goes back and he trades for the reliever that he was denied in the first scene with Cleveland in the movie by just absolutely schooling them, taking away all of their trade partners, trying to flip lesser relievers to dry up the trade market for Rincon, who's the reliever that they get. And then they finally do end up getting him. This scene is just phenomenal. Like, one of my favorite in the whole movie.
Yeah, it's the way that it's paced. Everything is very quick. It's very hectic. You get to see Billy being in control in relatively untested waters. You know, Peter Brand is kind of playing like the everyman. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, you just offered so-and-so to them. You can't offer so-and-so to them. As Billy's just constantly get Shapiro on line two, barking out the window or barking out the doorway. They have the super cool speakerphone that was in every like late 90s to early 2000s.
The course, triangular like
ever. Modular. Those things are sweet. Everybody wanted one.
Three phones. Three separate phone call, speakerphone. Peter Brand's on the phone with the owner. And there's conversations happening all over.
Moneyball A's don't happen without Suzanne and her coffee. She is carrying that organization.
Right.
Another runner, he walks into the office. Hey, Suzanne, coffee on? And she goes, yep, every time. Coffee's on. Yep.
Coffee's on.
In that scene as well, and I actually can't remember what the guy's name is actually, but he's trying to flip a reliever, and he's like, well, we'll ask for this lesser player. They're trying to get cash considerations. And he says his name wrong. He says, Michelson. And then he's like, see, I don't even know what his name is.
Yeah, it was Anderson. Anderson's a player. I didn't know his name until today. I don't like it. You don't like him either.
So let's just Michael, do it.
I don't even know his name, which is just amazing. Like, it's just it's a picture perfect just propagandization of the other GMs and Billy Bean finally getting exactly what he wants after the montage of success, and we're about to see it all really just come to a pinnacle here with the huge win streak that the A's are about to go through. I mean, I was not super familiar with this at the time. Does anybody want to give me kind of, if you've had some firsthand knowledge of this at the time, watching through the A's win streak?
After 10, it got really, really compelling. It's, I guess, like the de facto A's fans, because I went to the Coliseum whenever I was a kid and I thought it was the coolest experience ever. So I just kind of, like I said, became like a de facto A's fan. In 11, you know, they were horrible. They started off in last place and stayed there until these trades, and then they blew it up. You know, you got Kornheiser and Wilbon making fun of them every single day for doing this, and all of a sudden, once they started to get a little bit of steam going, now it's they've won 5 in a row. They've won 10 in a row. They've won 12 in a row. And it's on television every night, 14 in a row. Now they were talking about it on Pittsburgh Sports Talk Radio. And now there's 16 in a row. It's like, now we've really got something going here. The record at the time was 19, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah, I think. But yeah, and it's not the narrative shifted from, you know, this plucky band of idiots is rattling off 10 wins to it's like the narrative had shifted to, are the A's for real? And not just, you don't accidentally win 15 games in a row. You don't accidentally win 18 games in a row. People are starting to take this really seriously. And now for the 20th game in a row, it was a Royals series. Everybody was watching it. Everybody. I mean, I remember watching it. I was bartending. And I had a crowd of people in staying for that game. And of course, you know, the A's jump out to a huge lead. And all of a sudden starts to get chipped away. But that was one of the most compelling baseball games ever. Because everybody there was rooting for the A's. People who had never watched A's baseball. People who really weren't big baseball fans. People who definitely weren't American League baseball fans. Everybody is glued to this. And this is, you know, the game 20 is probably, you know, the penultimate point in the movie. I mean, it treats a regular season game kind of like, you know, game 7 of the World Series.
They do treat this as like the most important game in the movie, I think.
Right.
You know, there's another montage here, a good one, about the wins leading up through the 19th win. And you have Billy driving cool-ass truck, not watching the game, not wanting to be involved at all, as he does. Gets a call from his wife and daughter saying, you know, you're doing a great job. You know, his daughter's pleading with him to go back and watch the game and be with the team.
Yeah, he had been with the team during the streak, and his daughter is – you know, apparently an old school guy. Or you have to get back there. You have to go back.
So he, for the first time, does. He turns around. That's where he almost flips. He almost needs that roll bar for real. a scene of poor driving, I'll say that, to say the least.
Reckless.
Dangerous driving.
Not a good guy.
Gets back to Oakland and watches the game for the first time all season. And they start to blow this thing. It is through 3 innings, it's 11 to nothing. And the seams just come undone. The wheels fall off completely starting in the 4th inning. And it goes through how the Royals eventually end up having this game be tied 11-11, I believe. 10-10 or 11-11.
11-11.
The cinematography here, again, is great. Like, this movie is very nice to watch.
It takes a different tack than most baseball movies in the montage. I don't know if it's stylistic or if it was out of necessity, but it's a lot of like highlighted players against a very dark background, which I think is a very cool way to kind of watch this. It's probably because it was difficult to get that many extras. If you've ever seen the Oakland Coliseum, it was massive. But it, especially in this one, there's like a sense of dread with this. You know, it's everybody feels very isolated. You can watch them struggle, and it definitely plays that up in a very cool way. This scene builds a lot of tension for you as the viewer in a way where it's unsettling. It's, you know, watching all of this happen in real time, watching these guys struggle, especially, you know, it's the man in the arena. It's a dark background and them with a very bright light highlighting them, you know, chasing down a ball that they misplayed, or, you know, watching one go over the head.
Or 10 balls that they misplayed.
Yeah, as the case may be. If you give up, if you blow an 11-run lead.
The spotlight is quite literally on everyone, like you said, yeah. Like just how it's shot right there, and you do feel that sense of dread of everything that this movie has been building towards just slipping away, you know, through factors that are out of your control, really, at this point.
It wasn't. I mean, you do get a very theatrical, like on stage theatrical, like dark background, literal spotlight, like you said. Like, it seems very, the moment, this is the defining moment of the movie.
Like I said, this is played dead serious. It's like the Royals dropped the bomb. Yeah. Like, it is, like, there is a ton of tension. I get that they're going for the 20th win, but it does play it like it's game seven. There's more tension in this scene than there is in what did we just watch, the Scout in the World Series. There's so much more tension.
It's not even close.
Right. And this is just, it was, I think it was on a Thursday.
So right. And that's that. The two things that took me out of this scene, which I love this scene, by the way, these are very, very minor knocks. I have very, very few bad things to say about this movie as a whole. It was an incredible movie. The two things that took me out of the scene were, number one, this is a regular season baseball game and you've won 19 in a row. If you just lose one, you're like, we had a bad game. That took me out of it a little bit. Two, I think they did a pretty good job of casting actors that look like their MLB counterparts, because everyone in this movie, for the most part, is a real person that existed in real life. However, whoever they casted to play Raul Ibanez, they were like, what if they looked at a picture of Raul Ibanez and they were like, what if we got a guy that doesn't look anything like him at all?
Yeah, what if we found a different phenotype?
Like, it just doesn't look anything like him at all.
Would you would you be mad if you were Ibanez? Like because they clearly just, they're like, let's get a hotter guy.
I mean,
we need a beefcake in here.
That effectively is what they did, because
they did.
Raul Ibanez is a pretty unique looking dude, I think. And they were just like,
no, a guy that looks like that.
That's not a Hollywood. There's no guys in Hollywood that look like that.
Tell you what he's not going to look like. You, brother.
They really hit. Like,
is that cool?
No, it's not cool.
It's not cool.
Hollywood needs, I'll stand on it right now, we're going to put the BB seal of approval on this one. Hollywood needs more ugly guys.
I'm here for it. I can finally crack into acting.
That's it.
Steve Buscemi has had it too good for too long.
He's got the market cornered.
He walked up to Raul Ibanez and said, you're not getting anywhere near this, buddy.
You won't be able to get fired in this town, pal.
All of this to say, it does set up the defining moment of this 20 in this game 20 in this series, which is Scott Hatteberg hitting a walk-off dong to seal the 20th win. And this is played like, it's played like they just won the World Series.
It's the same shot as in The Natural, except it doesn't hit the lights because the Coliseum's too big.
I think that's purposeful. I mean, I think that's kind of, it's everything that Billy has been building towards. Like, it's 20 games in a row. It's a regular season game at the end of the day. Who really cares? We have to change baseball. We have to find a way to justify to the rest of the world why we did this.
Everybody that he picked for specific reasons to be bad at their job until eventually one guy is less bad.
And we do get like a bit of a pseudo ending here, I think. Like you said,
yeah.
Like they sit down, him and Peter, and they have a discussion. And, you know, he has the classic, it's hard not to be romantic about baseball line. But he goes beyond that. And I think this is the first time where you hear him kind of talk about, like, yes, it's about the winning, obviously. He kind of flips a little bit here, talking about how no one will remember if you lose the last game of the season. But then he also talks about how it's not just about that. It's about more than that. It's about changing the game of baseball. You know, it's not just about winning. It's about proving that we've done enough to change how people see the game as a whole. And to me, that's like a, it's a pseudo ending there, right? If the movie, you obviously want to know how the story plays out, but if the movie ended there, you'd get the right message for the most part. The stuff that happens after this, I think, is more personal. And I really think caps the movie off in a nice way. But this scene drives home the message of like what Moneyball is all about. To me, at least, that's how this scene plays out. But the team's not done yet because they're going to the playoffs. And for as grand and monumental as the 20th win was, that is how little fanfare they give the series with the Twins in the next scene. I mean, it is like almost non-existent.
Right.
The Twins just win. There's a montage of the team being dismantled, and it's just over. Just like that.
Which is kind of the grim reality of Moneyball. You know, it's it's why he tells Peter Brand he needs to get more comfortable firing guys or letting guys know they're not there anymore. You know, not necessarily just firing guys. But yeah, the grim reality of it is like it's going to be musical chairs, and we're going to replace guys, and they're going to fill very, very specific roles. And it's another thing that definitely wears on Billy Bean.
It's probably the biggest gut punch in the movie for me. Just like that build up, and you got the sound, and then it goes silent after, you know, the third baseman squeezes the ball, and it just goes to Joe Morgan laying out like this was never going to work. And it's just speaking for all of baseball right there. And like in that low moment of the year, it's like, by the way, none of this means anything at the end of the day. And that is really the gut punch of it all. I feel it
doesn't matter, especially, if you don't win the last game, right?
I know that, but coming from Joe Morgan, I think also hits more because like great player, you know, in his day, recognized, got his flowers, yeah. Analytics comes around and they're like, no, this guy's probably one of the 20 best baseball players who's ever played the game. And he's just disavowing everyone who's saying that along the way.
It is so interesting. I think it shows how fickle, like not just the fans, but the media and kind of everyone can be when you're down, when you're up, and when you're down again. That's why I like the montages. I think the montage at the start is like, this obviously was never going to work. They have the 20 win streak and they're saying, wow, this Moneyball thing, it's like they cracked the code, and then they lose again. And it's followed up with like the, hey, it was a nice, fun, little cute idea, but like, that's not how this game is played. Let's go back to picking guys that, you know, have confidence and the ball flies off their bat and, you know, they have attractive girlfriends and like stuff like that. And it's like, did they miss the point? And I like how it shows how quick those switches can be. Although I think it probably paints that a little unfairly. Like, Alex, I don't think you're flip-flopping that much. I think you're fairly consistent. And I feel like a lot of non-sensationalist media members are probably fairly more consistent in their takes as well.
Yeah, but those are the guys that don't get on the radio that Billy Bean listens to.
I guess that's fair.
And at the end of the day, isn't it just about radio hits, boys?
It is. It is.
There you go. We then go to Billy Bean being courted by the Boston Red Sox. And this scene is odd to me. I like it a lot. It's serious and not all at the same time. I think, Alex, you might have said before, you particularly like the discussion about the scarves.
Yeah. I just like that exchange right there. What do I get her? And he's off the cuff. Like, I gotta give an answer. I can't just say no to the job interview.
The only thing he can come up with is scarf.
Scarf.
Yeah, it's a scarf. Scarf.
Like, he's good at giving gifts. He gave his daughter the guitar.
Decorative one, I think he calls it.
Yeah. Get her a bowling ball for all I care. I don't know why. I just really like that little exchange of like job interview of your life and being thrown something that you totally didn't have to see that you have to just say something to.
And it's a cool part of the movie where you get to see Billy on his heels, you know, like it's the opposite of his scene whenever he's making trades, where he just really, really, really wants Ricardo Rincon. And in this one, I think what we're trying to, what they're trying to express here is that you can tell his heart's not in it.
There are two scenes in this, or two times this entire movie, where Billy Bean kind of just shuts up and listens to what the other person has to say. And it's whenever Peter Brand is saying that baseball is medieval and the, you know, Billy, this is Chad Bradford, like those two scenes. And then this at the end, there are three times in this movie where he just shuts up and listens. And the first two times is like, yeah, you know, I'm learning. And this is really just being courted after, you know, an entire movie of people saying you're wrong for this. You're wrong. It's a completely different environment. And I kind of like seeing him in that.
Oh, I
different look.
The quote that is said about that, because this does follow the montage of this was a failure and the team gets broken down. He's told the first guy through the wall always gets bloody, which
great quote,
absolute banger. I mean, that's fire. And he's just saying, hey, like, we believe in you. We believe in this methodology. We believe in Moneyball. You're, of course, going to get painted in a poor light because you did, at the end of the day, lose. But you won 20 games in a row. This is the part of the movie where they
break down the same record as the New York Yankees.
And they break down the money spent per win. And he eventually gets offered what would have made him the highest paid GM in all of sports. However, he does not take the deal. And this final scene in the movie kind of explains why that is. It's because he has such a tie to Oakland and such a tie to his family. But before that, there's a nice scene with Peter Brand where they detail how, I forget what level of ball is this, double A?
A or double A, yeah.
A player who is a
Brown,
twisted steel and sex appeal. I mean, he's a hunk if I've ever seen one. And he hits a home run. He doesn't even realize it. He trips going around first base. He's laying on the ground. He dives back to first, and everyone's like, "Get up! You hit a home run!" And you know, Peter says, "It's a metaphor." And Billy Bean goes, I know it's a metaphor. He understands. But even then, I think it doesn't really resonate with him, with Billy Bean at that point in time. At least it didn't seem like that to me from the movie. You know, his goal is to change the game. And he's effectively done that at this point, or at least that's what the movie is painting. But he just doesn't understand it at all. And he doesn't care about the metaphor. He doesn't care about the analogy. He goes and he lays on the field, which Peter sees through the TV. And then the movie ends with Billy in his truck again, listening to a CD that his daughter made for him, which was a recording of the song that she had played in the Guitar Center earlier on in the movie. And we end the movie that way. Few texts on screen afterwards detailing that he did not take the money. He stayed with Oakland. And that is the case because he feels so tied to Oakland. He feels so tied to his daughter and his family and kind of his mission there. A very touching end to the movie. A few tears were shed by yours truly at the end of the movie.
You big softy.
I mean, I just thought,
at the end of the day, you're just a big family man teddy bear.
That's, you know, what can I say?
And you finally embraced nerds. I think that's the real point of the movie.
It is interesting because there's very little Billy Bean. The movie portrays him as not really thinking for himself that much. He's kind of just pointing at Peter, being like, all right, we're going to find a way to do the thing that he said, which is super interesting because
trust the process, man.
Yeah, it's just like Billy Bean kind of is painted as Peter Brand's mouthpiece and the guy with the power to do the thing that Peter wants to do. Although I will say that scene where they have that conflict about, like, Peter's trying to talk him off the cliff and Billy's like, no, you buy into this thing or not. And then they, you know, they get rid of Giambi and Pena. I guess that's the one point where Billy's like, no, we're really buying into all this. But I thought they wrapped the movie up extremely well. Huge fan of how it ended. This movie was fantastic. So
does it say what he turned down? Doesn't it say the contract?
12.5 over 12, like five.
12.5 for a GM. That's insane.
12.
That's five. Like a third of what he had as a major league payroll.
Yeah.
Crazy. It is. Yeah. They had 39.
And it's funny that, you know, that he's talking to the Red Sox and how that, you know, the answer is not necessarily throwing a bunch of money at a problem, and make it go away. And there's like, we want you to make a problem go away. Here's $12.5 million. Here's more money than anyone's ever made at this job ever.
Which that they do talk about how the Red Sox went on to win the World Series just a few years afterwards. And it is funny because they kind of throw a couple shots at Johnny Damon in the movie before he leaves right. for the Boston Red Sox. And then they're like, by the way, Johnny Damon played a key role in the Red Sox winning the World Series, which is kind of interesting.
Everybody keeps saying that Damon's just not worth the money. Damon's a bad contract. They seem like a lot whenever they're not glazing Scott Hatterberg.
They say that, and it's like the Red Sox won with the ideas Oakland champion and Johnny Damon.
Any final thoughts on the movie before we take our ad break and start to talk about our trivia, our quotes, anything else? How do we, you know, maybe one topic I'd like to get into is like the real life Oakland A's, the real life Billy Beane in that story versus how they're portrayed in the movie. I think there's some key differences.
I mean, Moneyball started, or the analytics movement started before 2002. This wasn't an overnight thing right here. That's the most obvious. The other thing be that the best 1-2-3 punch, you know, three-headed monster for a rotation in our lifetimes was not mentioned. Neither was AL MVP Miguel Tejada outside of walking right. off during that.
But like they say Tejada's name. They don't say Barry Zito's name at all. He won the AL Cy Young. He had 23 wins.
Yeah. There's stuff like that. There's stuff from the book that I absolutely love that doesn't make it to the screen, but I get that a draft section would be superfluous to the actual team, even though that's my favorite chapter in the book. The trade deadline stuff is even better in the book than it is in the movie, even though the movie is really good.
Yeah, they fail to mention the rotation. Like they focus on one pitcher the whole movie.
One pitcher needs a reliever.
Chad Bradford.
Yes.
Right. They don't mention Miguel Tejada. And I can understand, you know, why they want to focus on these three particular pieces working is because like that's the stuff that needed to work for the team to work. But like they didn't talk about the stuff that they knew was going to work already. Which I think is an important part of why the team had the success that it did. Like Chad Bradford didn't pitch in 20 games in a row. You know, like he
could have. It was a different world back then.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe somebody.
Bill James say? If it's good with Bill, then I'm in.
Oh no, Solomon Torres pitched 93 games in a year. One year. They like somebody, it's a godless world.
If I'm wrong, somebody leave a comment on the YouTube. I think without further ado, we might have to bring you our ad read for today and get into some of our reviews and trivia and quotes.
In the concept of money, let's turn this one over to our corporate overlords.
Yeah, this movie is brought to you by 2000s nerds. 2000s nerds, imagine what happens whenever we have a jock to show us the way. I don't know why the ad put that read in first person, but, you know, it did. It is. It is what it is.
It makes it more personable.
Yeah, okay. This movie is also brought to you by scarves. Do you have an assistant you don't know what to get? Get her a scarf or a bowling ball for all I care.
And honestly, you know what? For Christmas this year, everyone's getting a bowling ball. So,
I was going to get them scarves.
That's good.
Oh my goodness!
Just email me which size and weight bowling ball you guys use, and you know, check on your doorstep in a couple weeks here.
Mine was thrown through the window.
Let me see if I have any quotes here. I know I already spoke about some of the ones that I really
There's some real snappy dialogue in this movie, man.
When describing the state of the Oakland A's to the scouts early on in the movie, there are rich teams, poor teams, 50 feet of crap, and then our team, which I think at the point was a great way to describe the Oakland A's. What else do we have here? Google Boy is just great. Love Google Boy. I mean,
that's awesome. I have on more than one occasion in a group chat called Alex Google Boy, and like it just nobody laughed, like nobody acknowledged it, and it was.
I will admit it. It wasn't until I watched it again last night that I realized, oh, that's what he's.
Okay, yeah, it was personally hurtful. I thought it was a great joke. I thought it was a great reference. One of my favorite quotes, I just want to throw this one in. I don't want to mow your lawn here, Deebs. But is losing fun? Then what are you having fun for? I love it. I absolutely love that line.
There's a lot of good serious quotes in this movie, right? Like the first guy through the wall always gets bloody is unbelievably good. You know, there's funny ones. Don't do that. Don't go on the internet or watch TV or read newspapers or talk to people.
Talk to anybody.
great one, but there is a lot of really good, tense, serious ones. I'm paying you for the player you are right now, right? Saying David Justice is holding on. It's not about that. It's what you can do right now. Hard not to be romantic about baseball. I mean, there's a lot of great ones in this movie. Not many that are funny to me outside of the don't do that, but a lot that are really, I think, like striking dialogue, which to me is always what separates. Like a movie can be good and get a good score for me personally without having great dialogue, but that's the difference maker to me is cinematography and dialogue. And this movie had both of those things in droves. What kind of trivia do we got going on for this one?
I mean, we already had that Billy Bean was remarried, and his wife, who actually I believe is still his wife, isn't mentioned in the film. The first director that was pinned for this before Bennett Miller, and Bennett Miller directed the Capote biopic, which is why I assume Philip Seymour Hoffman is in it, because watch Capote if you haven't. It was Steven Soderbergh, Sex Lies, Videotape. Aaron Brockovich, later on Magic Mike, for some reason. He wanted all of the players in the film to play themselves. He didn't want to use actors. He wanted all the players to play themselves in the movie.
And then they saw Raul Abanez.
They were like, nope. Nope. You thought. Hey, get him out of here. Go get Bennett Miller.
A good chunk of those players were still playing in 2011, though.
Yeah, it's I don't know where you like when you film it. All the visiting all the away games are just at Dodger Stadium. I don't know if you guys noticed that. I think it's another reason why everything's dark. But regardless of who they're playing, it's at Dodger Stadium, so it's clearly the only stadium they got to use because it's close.
Yeah.
We talked about Tejada won the MVP. The book definitely is critical of like him being free swinging, and he does have one of the greatest baseball quotes of all time, and it's nobody walks off the island. Like if you wanted to play baseball in the United States, you had to get out there and just stroke dongs, baby, just crank some homers.
That's an incredible line.
Nobody walks off the island. I love it. I absolutely love it. And that's I believe he's the one that said that. I don't know where he heard it from, but I think it is attributed to him. It's not really trivia, but it did piss me off. In Billy Bean's flashback, whenever he strikes out, he swings and the umpire calls strike three. Whenever you swing, the umpire doesn't say anything. You know what it is. If he's just a swing and a miss, they don't say anything. And he calls strike three after he swings. So, like, I don't know if there's personal vendetta. Maybe it was a dick move. I do have an incredible connection to a previous film that we had covered. When Billy's talking to the Red Sox owner about scarves, what movie was that guy in that we've covered? There's only a handful of them. What movie was he in and who did he play?
Oh, I can't remember what he played. I know what movie he was in.
What movie was he in?
He was in The Sandlot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who do you play? There's only a handful of adults.
Was he one of the cops in the flashback?
Was he the dad?
Scotty Smalls. It's really? The adult Scotty Smalls.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Calling the Dodgers game.
Yep.
Wowzers.
Yeah. Cool moment, right?
That's pretty sweet.
Those are literally the only two movies I have ever seen that dude in.
Baseball guy.
Baseball guy.
Big baseball guy.
Love him. It was amazing. Also really cool, like, you know, watching A's game. And the reason why, like, I just kind of grown fond of the A's just because I was in the Coliseum in like 94 or 95. They were a West Coast team. And as somebody who keeps really weird hours and has been bartending for almost 22 years, I watch a lot of West Coast baseball because it's on after work. It was cool to hear Ray Fosse, like one of the GOATs. Ray Fosse was an absolute maniac in the booth. So it was really cool to hear that dude.
The last two movies we watched had some nice like actual sports commentators. Actually, it was
Costas is in this one too, right?
Yeah, yep. And also in
he's in the Scout,
Mr. 3000 as well. There's a lot of like real sports personalities in all three of these last ones that we watched. Very nice. Well, let's get into our ratings here. We'll start off with baseball realism. I thought the baseball realism in this one was above average, but not like completely stunning. It was okay. Again, like a lot of it is like guys taking walks and getting on
base. I love the montage where it's just guys taking a good AB.
I think I'm going to give
it. I love it.
I think I'm going to give it, I'll give it 7.5 out of 10 handfuls of popcorn.
I'm going to give this, I think 7.5 is pretty good. I'm going to go 7.25 because it's a little stylized. Like, we really don't see a lot of actual baseball. We see mostly like individuals. Everybody kind of appears to look like they have seen the sport of baseball, which is nice considering some of the other movies we watched. I'm going to give it 7.25 out of 10 ugly girlfriends.
When I watched the movie, I thought that that one was coming. I thought that that one was going to show up. How are you feeling about baseball realism, Alex?
I mean, it glorifies the parts of the game that, like we said, aren't really the sexiest parts that will never be shown in like an actual montage, but are like 90% of what the actual game is. I'll give the baseball realism a 7 out of 10 with the 3 points being the big three that they omitted from this movie. Where is Tim Hudson, Mark Mulder, and Barry Zito?
Unbelievable, man. Like, Barry Zito's just not in it. He's not even like in the background milling around. There's not a guy in a Barry Zito jersey. We just get all that sweet, sweet Scott Hatterberg.
Chad Bradford, his head nearly touching the ground, his wrist skimming the grass as he throws the ball.
Knuckle dragger, man. Like, that's way more.
It's more compelling.
Who doesn't love a sidearm pitcher? Am I right?
Movie score. This one's rating highly for me. This movie was fantastic, in my opinion.
It was nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, yeah. We didn't do our noms. Nominated for Best Picture.
That's the big one. It got a lot of nominations. That's the big one.
I, as a general rule, and I don't know how many movies we're going to watch where I will have to abide by this rule, is that I usually can't give a movie above like an 8.5 without multiple watches, but this was really bordering on that for me. I think I'm going to give it an 8. I'm going to give it an 82.5 out of a possible 100 player evaluations.
The movie's incredibly watchable. It's like 2 hours and change. It's a very quick watch. It moves very well. The pacing is good. It can be a little choppy because it's adapted from a novel. It does omit a couple of things. So like the time skips, not that they're super integral to that. I think the movie's very well acted. I think the movie's very well shot. I'm going to give it 8.5 out of 10 $1 Clubhouse sodas.
Very nice.
I don't know who I'm stealing this quote from, but it's a movie with 20 good scenes and no bad scenes is a perfect movie. And this kind of feels like that for me.
Scott Hatterberg said that.
He did? In Miguel Tejada?
Yeah. This Scott Hatterberg propaganda film.
There isn't an ounce of fat on this movie. Everything serves either the characters or the themes or the story. It really just hits us a different way. And like I said at the beginning, it just shows that if you have the opportunity, you can do great things. I think it's a perfect baseball movie. I am going to give this movie three players whose average OBP is 364 out of three.
Amazing. That might be our first. I mean, that equates to 100. That's a 10 out of 10, a 3 out of 3.
It equates to 1092, but you know.
In the aggregate, yeah.
I'll go with 1092 out of 10.
That is an extremely good score for an extremely good movie. A fantastic film, I think. It had the intangibles. It had the crisp dialogue. It had the cinematography.
It does have Brad Pitt wearing the hell out of those pleated chinos the whole time.
Yeah.
There's a heavy pleat. That's a front pleat, man. Visor and a heavy pleat. Could be the move. We could bring him back. What if we rock visors and pleat front pants to games this year?
Folks, we can do this.
You've heard of the Wolf game. Now we're bringing you the Billy Bean pleated pants windbreaker visor game. That would crush, I think.
Book it. I'm writing it down.
The scene where he walks in and he walks past the reporters and he has the aviators on as well is just amazing.
What's wrong with the aviators?
No, I'm saying it completes.
Okay, I thought I was gonna. Yeah, we were gonna have to go back to commercial. We're gonna have to start talking about scarves again.
It completes the look.
Okay.
With that being said, just want to extend a huge thank you to our esteemed guest, Alex Stumpf. I want to remind everybody to watch Moneyball if you haven't. And to subscribe to the YouTube and the Twitter. I think for this week, obviously, like the episode, share it, ring the bell, subscribe. I think what you should do is make maybe 4 or 5 separate montages of all of your favorite parts of the episodes and then lay them out to tell a compelling story about all of the Moneyball members of Just a Bit Outside. And that should inspire everybody to change the podcast game. And I think that's the perfect way to end this one off. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for getting your popcorn, and we will see you next time. Best seats at the Pirates game, they let me run the base. Yeah, my time is like my money, cause I can't afford to waste. Wifey is a lawyer, take my date to my dates, order steak by the plate.